Hello, everyone. My name is Vicky Shabo, and I'm Vice President at the National Partnership for Women and Families in Washington, D.C. I'm excited to announce that just a few minutes ago, more than 203 leading deans and professors from business and management schools across the country sent an unprecedented letter to Congress calling for national paid family and medical leave, specifically the Family and Medical Insurance Leave, or FAMILY Act. The signers of this letter are faculty from 88 schools across the country, including the nation's most prestigious business and management universities and institutions. And I'm honored to be here today to have a few of those professors on this call, three of them. First, Dr. Stuart D. Friedman, lead author of the letter and a professor of practice management at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania and director of Wharton's Work-Life Integration Project. Second, Dr. Amy C. Edmondson, Novartis Professor of Leadership and Management at Harvard Business School, and Dr. Scott Beeson, Professor of Management at Fairleigh Dickinson University. You'll get a chance to hear from each of those professors in a few minutes, and then I'll open it up to questions from reporters. But first, I'd really like to put this historic letter into context. And this is really a unique moment that we're in, and so I think this letter is all the more exciting, given everything that's been going on recently on paid leave. But first, the National Partnership has been working to advance family-friendly workplace policies like paid leave for decades, ever since we led the fight for the Family and Medical Leave Act, or FMLA, which became law more than 20 years ago, back in 1993. But the FMLA set an unpaid leave standard for this country, and about 40% of the workforce isn't covered by its protections because they work for smaller companies, work part-time, or haven't been on the job long enough. Today, just 13% of workers have access to paid family leave through their employers. Fewer than 40% have access to personal medical leave through an employer-provided temporary disability insurance program. And shockingly, only half of new mothers take any paid leave of any length after the birth of their first child. The totality of these sobering statistics means that millions of workers have been left behind. They're forced to choose between their jobs and their families when serious health or caregiving needs arise. That's unacceptable, and it hurts workers, their families and communities, our economy, and our country. And that's why the National Partnership has convened a broad and diverse coalition of hundreds of organizations from across the country that's pushing for a federal paid leave law, specifically pushing for the Family Act. The Family Act would create a national paid family and medical leave insurance program modeled on successful paid family leave programs that are already in place in California, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. It would be funded through small employer and employee contributions. This program would allow workers, no matter where they live or what jobs they hold, to earn a portion of their pay for up to 12 weeks when they need to take time to recover from a serious illness or injury of their own, care for a loved one with a serious illness or injury, welcome a new child, or deal with certain caregiving needs that arise from a family member's military service. Employers and lawmakers are increasingly recognizing the benefits of paid leave. I'm talking here about companies like Microsoft, Facebook, Adobe, Nestle, which recently announced expansions of their paid leave policies. Local government officials in places like Atlanta, Boston, and Kansas City have implemented paid leave protections for city employees. Paid family leave bills were introduced in about 20 states in 2015 alone. And just last week, President Obama called on Congress to pass a national paid family and medical leave law for the first time ever, and he specifically named the Family Act as the leading proposal. Support for the Family Act has been steadily growing since the bill was first introduced by Senator Gillibrand of New York and Representative Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut in December of 2013. Companies of all sizes have endorsed the bill, including well-known businesses like Patagonia and Eileen Fisher. And this letter today that's been sent by business professors adds to this growing momentum and further makes the business case for a national paid leave program. We are thrilled and grateful that the academic community has organized in this way. This letter is a ringing endorsement, a powerful, unprecedented message to members of Congress that a national paid leave program is good for businesses and good for our economy. To talk more about that business case and the importance of public policy in establishing a paid leave standard, it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Stuart D. Friedman, who led today's effort. Stu, would you like to go ahead?
Thanks, Vicki, for your leadership on this issue, and thanks all for being a part of this conversation today. I am very proud to be involved in this initiative, and truly inspired by my 200-plus colleagues from around the country, including from all of the top 25 business schools, as we have come together to express our voice collectively in support for the Family Act. About 30 years ago, just around the time my first son was born, I started to talk in my classroom at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania about what the next generation's need from business leaders really looks like at a personal level and what that meant for my students as future business leaders. And that conversation back in October 1987 really shifted the direction of my personal career trajectory, but it also had a very important impact on what we were doing at Wharton. So in 1991, I started the Work-Life Integration Project as a way to respond to the questions that students gave me on that day in October 1987 when I asked them, what are you going to do as future business leaders to help develop not just the next generation of talent, but of the next generation, period. And they turned to me and said, well, you're the professor. You tell us, what should we do? And that's been an ongoing conversation for the last 30 years. But I can tell you when I first began that dialogue, there was a lot of resistance and a lot of questioning as to the relevance of the question I was asking for business life in general in our society. Why are we talking about this, professor? Nobody cares about your family. Nobody cares about families in general. We're here in business school to talk about business. And so that was just one source of resistance back then among students, wondering, why are we talking about this? How is it relevant? And isn't it really just a women's issue? And now here we are almost 30 years later, and the world has truly shifted in a radical way to help us all understand that this is not just a women's issue, that's for sure. And it's certainly an issue that affects our businesses and our society in critically important ways. And that's why we as business school faculty, we hear every day what our students are concerned about. And now our students are crying for change. They are seeking employment in organizations that are going to provide them with the flexibility and the freedom to pursue lives that they truly want to be living. We started studying the attitudes and values of the Wharton School community way back in the early 90s and did a study recently comparing the class of 1992 with the class of 2012. And we found a remarkable shift in their attitudes and values about work and family and the rest of life, including in response to this question, do you plan to have or adopt children? Yes, probably, not sure, probably not, and no, were the response alternatives. And back in 1992, the undergraduates, 22-year-olds, in 1992, 79% of them, men and women, said, yes, I do plan to have or adopt children. 20 years later, in 2012, 42% of men and women said that they had planned to do that. And that was not because they had any less interest in becoming parents. They still had the same level of interest and desire. It's just that they didn't see how they could do it. And that is a powerful indication of what we know to be true, and that is that young men and women today, and it's men and are looking for solutions, they're looking for support, and that's why every company that comes to a recruit at our schools puts front and center in their recruiting pitch, you can have a meaningful life and meaningful work here at our company, please join us. That's because young people today are pressing hard for change. And again, it's not just about women. Men want this as much as women. In fact, our young men are saying, I expect my spouse to be full-time employed, and I don't want to be the kind of father my father was. I want to be fully engaged in my work and my family life. And so the companies that are ahead of the curve on this and creating the kind of freedom and flexibility that allows men and women to live the lives they truly want, they're going to have a much better time of it in terms of attracting and retaining talent. And that is a primary motivator here, but of course many companies are not able to afford that, and that's where the Family Act provides a kind of a net of support in terms of our social policy, which we know is working at the state and municipal levels where we have research evidence that shows that this plan is one that fairly distributes the cost of leave that employees can take. And it says to companies and people throughout America, we believe in supporting families that have real medical needs and need to care for their children. And that will allow us to start to get close to parity with our the nations in the rest of the developed world, where compared to them, we look like Neanderthals because we do not have a national policy that does support families and children. This is helping to spur change in corporate policy, and of course the Family Act can be supplemented by those companies that, especially in the tech industry right now over the last couple of months, they're falling over each other trying to outdo each other in terms of the benefits that they're offering. So this is no longer just a men's, just a women's issue. Men want it as much as women. And the evidence we see is that it's good not just for families and for parents and for children. It's good for business. The evidence that we have shows that when you invest in the whole person, when you provide the kind of support that we're talking about here, what you get in return is loyalty and commitment and engagement. So women who take maternity leave are more likely to stay with their companies than those who do not. So there's a mounting body of evidence that shows that this policy not only makes sense as a moral imperative for our nation, but as a business imperative for our companies. And I am very glad to know that you are here helping us by paying attention to this issue, and look forward to your comments and questions after my colleagues speak. So, Vicki, let me turn it over to you.
Thanks so much, Sue. I appreciate it. We're going to hear next from Dr. Amy Edmondson from the Harvard Business School. She's the Novartis Professor of Leadership and Management there at HBS. Amy?
Thanks, Vicki. And Stu said it all and said it with such passion that I'll just echo a couple of things and maybe add a little bit. And as Vicki pointed out, my title is I am a professor of leadership. I think this is a leadership issue. It's a business leadership issue, but it is, of course, a political leadership issue as well. It is time for the nation to show leadership in this issue. I have to say that to stop and reflect on the conversation Stu has been having at Wharton for 30 years is a bit sobering. How on earth have we been having this conversation for 30 years? It's time to move beyond having the conversation and really creating a floor, if you will. So I think a national program, and the reason why we need the act and a reason why we need a national program, is that that is a way of creating a floor that makes widespread change for all employees and all businesses possible.
Mm-hmm.
Stu talked about his MBA students. I have many of those, and I would echo what he said. They are, men and women, are passionate about making it possible to have children, to have families, to take care of ailing parents and so forth, and not sacrifice either their actual performance or their perceived performance on the job. They worry about that, and it goes so much beyond that population. The many, many other employees who do not have, you know, who are not MBA graduates, are often the ones who really suffer because of the lack of a required standard in the country that allows paid leave for childbearing and, of course, other care that families may need. So I think that this is just an essential and overdue step. My own research and that of others is very much focused on creating the kinds of work environments in which employees will commit and engage fully in the work because they feel they can speak up, they feel they're heard, and the benefits that Stu also mentioned of learning, of loyalty, of productivity are very real indeed. So I'll just close by saying I think a policy is absolutely critical at this point, and it's not enough. Organizations also have to be, and leadership is needed to help organizations change their culture to one in which taking advantage of the policy is not seen as a weakness, that leaders within and outside organizations are willing to walk the walk, not just talk the talk on this issue.
Great. Professor Edmondson, thank you so much. And these points about culture and policy working together are so important as we look at what's been effective and what's not and how we can use public policy and culture change to build a better country. So now I'm happy to turn the floor over to Dr. Scott Beeson of Fairleigh Dickinson University. He's a professor of management there. Scott?
Yes, thank you so much. We business professors are at an interesting crossroads. We interact with the business community almost daily. We work with executives and managers not just in our classrooms but in consulting projects and even inside organizations. So we're very clued into and very tied into the business necessities and the immediate concerns of the business community. But we are also part of the academy, and we could see beyond the immediate concern and look across disciplines and see a bigger picture as well. And I think if we look at it from both of those points of view, we will see that expanded paid family and medical leave, including the Family Act, is something that would benefit really every single stakeholder in this: businesses, families, men, women, and children. In addition to me having, with my fellow business school professors, a foothold in two fields, I also work a lot in the areas around fatherhood and parenting. And I work a lot with writers and thinkers and advocates for a more modern, involved fatherhood. And my observation, dealing with thousands of dads, is that almost every dad I know or have ever talked to cares a lot about success at work, providing for their families, and putting in the work to be a hands-on, loving, involved father. And so many share this desire to share parenting more equally with their spouses. And unfortunately, because of the lack of family-supportive policies in our country, many men face barriers to this. In the workplace, too few women have available maternity leave, but the prospects are even worse for paternity leave. So a policy like the Family Act would create a floor that would create much more equity throughout our society. First off, parental leave would not just be something that people who have awesomely progressive employers, like in the financial and in the tech world, would have access to this. So it would not just be for white-collar employees of means, but this is something that would cover everyone, hourly employees, working-class employees, and working parents from throughout the economic spectrum. Also, the fact that the Family Act provides benefits to mothers and fathers relatively equally can really help with gender equity both in the workplace and in the home. In too many families, the husbands and wives, aspire to an egalitarian approach. But what happens when a mom can take maternity leave, but a father either is not offered paternity leave or could not take paternity leave because it would be career suicide, it sets up a gendered family dynamic that neither really wanted in the first place. It holds the woman back in her career, leading to pay inequity and other problems for women's advancement in the workplace. But it also tends to exclude men from participating equally as confident parents. And this is bad for everyone. Families are stronger when both moms and dads are supported. And strong families are obviously good for kids, is good for our society in so many ways. And finally, if we have this blanket floor, the Family Act, that applies to all people, this takes the onus off of managers to be magnanimous or to see beyond and see the long term. This is just be something that becomes normal, and it takes the onus off people to be heroes to provide what they should be providing anyway. All they have to do is follow the law, and this would create, again, in many ways, a society that's more equitable and a society that works better for all of us in the business community and parents and families.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate that. And thank you to you, Dr. Beeson, and to Drs. Edmondson and Friedman. Before I open it up for questions, I think the points that you all have brought out, as I said before, about policy and culture, about setting a floor upon which employers can improve, but that meet the needs of the 87% of workers that don't have access to paid family leave now, to help those 50% of new moms that don't have access to paid leave now, to help the millennials who make up 25% of family caregivers and yet are so often also dealing with having children on their own. This legislation really speaks to the needs of all people, no matter where they live, where they work, what job they hold, because at some point, nearly everybody will experience a circumstance, whether it's the joy of a new child or the sadness and fear that goes with an illness of their own or a family member's. So thank you for your contributions to this important conversation and the enthusiasm from the 200-plus faculty members across the country who signed on to this has just been really humbling and wonderful. So I am now going to open it up for questions. Operator, we're ready if there are questions from the press on the phone.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touch tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, just press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. Okay, our first question comes from Emily Crockett with RH Realty Check.
Hi, folks. Thanks for holding this call. I just wanted to ask some of the professors who are here with us if you know of anybody who else, anybody else who signed the letter, if any of you have experienced pushback from colleagues at the business school over this letter.
No.
I, in a word, no. Okay.
Yeah, I have not. This is Stu. But I can tell you that when I first started talking about this issue back in the late 80s, I got major pushback from senior colleagues who were telling me, Stu, you have a promising career in our field. Why are you ruining it by taking up this issue that nobody cares about because it's really only about women and babies? So I actually had that conversation a long time ago. But today, I'm only hearing support. So another indication how much has changed in the course of just my generation.
Yes, and if I could just add to that, I recently wrote a book dealing with fathers and working family issues, and Stu actually wrote a forward to it. And it's kind of interesting because we're, you know, of almost an entire generation difference between us. And the support that I received in writing this book is, you know, very different than the resistance he encountered many years ago, and in many ways he blazed the trail by raising this issue for so many years. And now we're getting to a point where society's starting to recognize that you know, parenting and work and family issues is really something that affects all of us and is not just a woman's issue. If it were just a woman's issue, it would still be important enough that we should deal with, but it goes beyond that.
And Amy, was there anything you wanted to add there?
No, I guess the one thing I would add is that everyone I asked and mentioned it to was very, very happy to participate.
Yeah.
Thank you for the question, Emily. The one thing I would say, too, is I think it's notable that there is representation from all of the 25 top business schools, and, you know, sort of ideologically, those really span the gamut from those that are thought of as more progressive to those that are maybe thought of as more traditional or conservative, and so it's notable, the breadth and diversity of support, whether you're looking at geography or institutions.
And just to build on that, it seems to me that this is an issue from what we know about polling that appeals to both the left and the right on the political spectrum. There's very few people who are antagonistic to the idea of providing support for working families.
That's a great point, Stu. Operator, are there more questions?
Yes, ma'am. Our next question will come from Andrea Davis with Employee Benefit News.
Hi. Thank you for taking this call. Our readers are primarily employers, small to mid-sized employers, many of whom have expressed to me that they have absolutely no appetite for their payroll taxes, particularly in light of the Affordable Care Act. How would you respond to their concerns?
So this is Vicki. I'd be glad to jump in and then turn it over to the business school faculty members. I think one of the most notable things as we here at the partnership have worked to develop support and do education, both with employers and with different advocacy groups and with legislators around this issue. It's actually the number of small businesses that have signed on in support. The statistics from California about support for the California program among small businesses, and that's because this pay-for structure provides the ability for employers to have their employees be taken care of without putting large costs on employers themselves. So if you look at survey research from Small Business Majority, more small employers favor the Family Act structure than oppose it. More than 60% of California businesses are supportive and supports higher, and the problems with the law have been less complicated among smaller employers. So there is sort of traditional resistance often among businesses and among business organizations in particular, but the actual lived experiences of businesses in the states that have these programs, including long-standing programs like temporary disability insurance in New Jersey, which has the employer-employee pay-for structure that is contemplated here in the Family Act, have been overwhelmingly positive. The costs are very, very small. The contemplated payroll tax is 0.4%, and that's split between employers and employees, so 0.2% each. And it's capped so that nobody is paying in more than $250 or so a year for any one employee. I'm not sure whether any of the business faculty have sort of the business professor take on that.
Well, just if you look at the historical perspective, this is Stu again, you know, change of this sort takes a long time, and yes, this is a new model. And, of course, there's going to be a short-term apparent cost, but as Vicky so clearly put it, this cost is shared and it's really small, and the benefit that it provides and the signal that it sends is certainly all of us signatories on this letter believe worth the cost. But, it's, you know, you raised a very important point about you know, this being an incursion on the freedom of small business owners. But the way this deal is structured and the evidence that we have from California, which has been doing this for over 10 years now with almost 2 million people making claims, and the pretty good research that's been done on the outcome of that policy all point to how this is a business benefit in the medium term, and that is, you know, again, it's new, it is different than the way things have been, but the benefits, and that's part of what we're trying to do with this letter, is bring the benefits, even to small and medium-sized businesses, to the fore so that people aren't reacting just as a kind of knee-jerk, oh, another tax who needs it, but instead look at the data and you'll see that attraction, retention, all those intangible costs are reduced with the small, you know, well-distributed payroll tax that's being contemplated here in the past.
Great. Thanks, Stu. Operator, we're ready for another question if there is one.
Thank you. Again, if you would like to ask a question, you can press star 1 at this time. Okay. There are no further questions in the queue at this time.
If there are no more questions, if I could just add a little bit to the answer to the prior one. This is Scott Beeson here. In my experience, large companies are finding it easier to implement paid parental leave programs because they see the costs of employee turnover and the need for employee attraction and retention. And for small businesses who are sometimes just so immersed in the short term, it's harder for them to appreciate kind of the long-term benefits of these policies. So I think the data is there. I think that the business case is there to be made, and that's something that we as professors and as advocates need to do a better job on because, again, as Stu mentioned, really the research and the data and the experience from California and from other places is there. We just need to spread the word and in a way that incorporates some of the fears and concerns of small business owners.
Thank you, Scott. That's a great point. Well, if there are no further questions, thank you to the listeners for being on today. Thank you to Drs. Edmondson, Beeson, and Friedman for being part of this effort and for motivating your colleagues all across the country. 199 other of you to sign on this effort. Thank you very much, operator. And for folks who are looking for the letter, it is on the Wharton School Work-Life Integration website, and it will be there for posterity. So thanks very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect. Speakers, please hold the line.